Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay in the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my co-hostess Misty Hall and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. Unfortunately, Misty's going to be a few moments late because she's on the road, returning from Kentucky to Florida, but she should be here shortly. Tonight is a very special night for us because we have one of our all-time favorite guests with us, Miss Patsy Ray Dawson. So I'd like to welcome you, Patsy, back to the show, and thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always something I really enjoy talking to you, Bonnie. You kind of have, like you talk about, a hard-hitting show. You also have pretty hard-hitting questions that make all of us think. So I'm real glad to be here tonight.
Well, actually, my questions are pretty easy-hitting, I think. My questions are, like, why do you want to live with a gay man? That's not too hard, right?
Right.
I think that's pretty easy, actually. But before we get started, I just wanted to make a few announcements, Patsy, that
okay.
Looks like I'm going to be very lucky in having the actual opportunity to meet you, you know, in March, because I'm planning a trip to Texas where we can get together with some of our women. So if you're in the Texas area or you want to travel to the Texas area, Patsy and I will be there, and we would love to meet you. We're going to hold a meeting together to give support to our, you know, women, and there's a lot of them in the Texas area. I know Texas is a big place, but we'll somehow find each other. And also, I wanted to make it, you know, just let people know that during the Christmas week, I'm planning to go to New York City. So if you're in the New York City area, get in touch with me at bonnie.k@aol.com. And we're going to have some women getting together there for a nice long lunch or dinner. So just let me know if you're interested in doing that. And also right now, Misty looks like she's gotten home and she's going to be on the phone in a second. So just hold on 1 second. Okay, Misty, welcome home.
Thank you. How are you tonight, Bonnie?
Doing good, and Patsy's with us now.
Good.
Yeah,
hello, Patsy. How are you?
I'm doing
really great.
Good. Well, I'm worn out, but I'm glad to be back.
No, we're glad to have you back.
Thanks.
And also, I just wanted to mention before we got started on the show that, you know, our good friend and support group member, Debbie, who was just on our show a few weeks ago, Debbie Thomas Brown from Florida, you know, just sent me some really valuable information that I'll be sharing in our next newsletter. But it's a beautiful site where you can go to and you can just plug in your zip code. So if any women need tests for HIV testing, you know, it's so easy to find. I just tried out the website link and I found a whole bunch of, you know, testing sites in my neighborhood a few blocks away that I had no idea even existed. So no woman should have to worry, you know, where does she have to go in order to get tested for HIV or any other kinds of sexually transmitted diseases. So if you would like to get that site, just write to me at bonnie.k@aol.com. And thank you, Debbie. I know Debbie's listening to our show, too. And people are just so excited that Patsy's coming back. And I guess the reason why people are excited, besides the fact that Patsy's always certainly amusing and controversial and funny, and the most important reason is because so many women really suffer with the whole problem of having, you know, a gay husband when it comes to the religious aspects of leaving. And in fact, tonight, Patsy, in our chat room, we had one young woman who's married to a pastor, and she's been married to him for 20 years, and of course he's in denial, and, you know, he refuses to come out. And have you found that pretty prevalent in the Christian community when it comes to, you know, somebody coming out?
Well, that's probably so because I really only know of two men who have come out. Of course, they did not come out to society, their congregation, or anything like that. They came out to their wives. And I only know of two who have done that, but as I look back over the last 40 years of working with women and listening to them complaining about what was going on in their sexual lives, I just think there are lots of men like this out there hiding, married to straight women, making their wives' lives miserable, and denying at least to their wives what the marriage problem is. And these were all women who were trying to solve the sexual problem. They were talking to their husbands about it. They were, I know one lady that every new preacher that came into the congregation, she talked to him about it. So she talked to dozens of preachers, and so she was trying to solve the problem. She was ragging on her husband, and these guys, they weren't being honest to anybody. But, you know, after we see your checklist of what these guys are doing and what they're like, I just feel certain that most of these women, that's the problem they were dealing with, and even if they weren't, If they had known about this problem, and if I had known about it when they were talking to me about it, to at least confront him and say, you know, look, fella, if you're not a homosexual, quit acting like one.
Uh-huh.
So I would say, yes, it's probably very well hidden.
I'll say this. I always tell women that they have to trust their instincts. That, you know, straight women who have straight husbands don't come to me and ask me if their husbands are gay. I mean, if you have that instinct that your husband's gay, it's a different feeling than when your husband's cheating with another woman. You know, it's a totally different phenomenon because it's just not the infidelity issue. There's so many different issues when it comes to this. And I just wanted to mention, if anybody is interested in calling in, our number here is area code 646-716-4893, in case you have any questions you would like to ask Patsy. I'll repeat it again, area code 646-716-4893. But I think these marriages are so filled with complexities that someone who had a straight husband would not be thinking my husband is gay, even if they're not having sex. You know, because there are other reasons why people don't have sex. You know, certainly I do acknowledge that, but this is something totally different. No, this is not because of a temporary fix, because you're having a financial problem, you're overworked. I mean, even people who are overworked or have financial problems or have illnesses, when they get past that, you know, they want to resume their normal sexual habits.
Right.
So have you found that to be the case?
Yes. All these women I'm talking about, this wasn't a temporary problem. This is like a problem they've had their whole marriage. They've been trying to solve it for however many years they've been married. One woman had been married about 20 years. And ironically, she had been married before, been married to a man who was very sexually active. And when she would talk to me, she would compare the two men, how different they were. And so she recognized there was a difference. But 40 years ago, women just, you know, the topic never came up. Well, I wonder if he's a homosexual. That was just too bizarre to even think about it back then. Even though she had that other sexual experience and could compare it, the thought that her husband might be a homosexual never entered her mind, never entered mind to bring it up to her.
So what, you know, when women come to me, and they're telling me that scripturally the Bible will not allow them to leave a marriage no matter what. How do you respond to that as a Christian?
Well, I don't know where they read that in the Bible. I suspect somebody's told them that, and they haven't asked them, okay, give me the chapter and verse where that is so I can read it for myself. There's a lot of people that are very dogmatic about divorce, and they have very simplistic views of it, and they just spout that immediately and expect everybody to just fall down, and that's the end of the topic. But women in these miserable marriages, and men in miserable marriages to women who are sexual duds, God does not trap anybody in a miserable, unloving marriage. And even these people's favorite verse in Malachi 2:16, where God says, I hate divorce, if you continue reading that passage, what he hates is the person who acts in such a way that it forces their mate to divorce them. And God turned right around and divorced Israel. He was a divorced husband. And what I've been telling people is God may hate divorce, but he loves sex more. And I've been working on updating my first marriage volume, and I'm going through the Song of Solomon, just having a ball looking at all those beautiful passages about lovemaking. And one thing I found in kind of trying to update my material, I'm reading a book somebody recommended to me. It's actually for your teenagers. But my mind works kind of different than other people, so I'm applying it to married people, and it's called Hooked, New Science on How Casual Sex is Affecting Our Children. And it's by Joe F. McElpaney, I think is how his name is. And mm-hmm. the other one, he is a doctor, a medical doctor, and he wrote it with Frieda Bush, who's also a medical doctor. And I was just blown away about a section in here about three hormones that are involved in sex. And I got to thinking about how this affects women married to homosexual men. Because, mm-hmm. you know, God says he's made our bodies wonderfully. We're his creation, his design. And the first hormone that they talk about is dopamine. And this is the hormone that hooks people on sex. It's a pleasure. If it feels good, then you're releasing this hormone, and it makes you kind of want to keep doing it. So this is how promiscuous teenagers can get hooked on sex. But mm-hmm. also, you know, if a husband and wife are engaging in sex, they are releasing this dopamine hormone so that they're getting hooked on sex between the two of them. So the more good sex you have, the more you want to have in your marriage. And so this is a hormone that God built into sex for husband and wives. But it's really interesting to me that God then has a hormone that targets women, and he has a different hormone that targets men. And these hormones are released by touching. They are released by, of course, sex is the most intimate touching that there is, and it really releases these hormones. And these doctors, what these doctors have done, we're in the age of where they have all the brain scans, so they are looking at what's happening with people during sex, seeing what's happening in their brains, and they are seeing how these hormones are released. So there's just tremendous medical evidence just being generated all the time about the physical benefits of sex. And these doctors, I'm not picking up on anything religious in this book. It's just strictly medical. What they're talking about is these hormones affect your emotions. So, and they use the word, it is like gluing. They use the word glue. It is like gluing a husband and wife together emotionally. And you know when you go to Genesis in the creation account where God says, and a man created Adam and Eve and Adam said that a man would leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife. That word cleave literally means to stick like glue. And it just fascinates me that God put a hormone in the woman and he put a hormone in the man so that if they are engaging in sex regularly, it is binding their emotions together like glue. And we're going right straight back to Genesis, to the creation of Adam and Eve. The hormone for women, I imagine a lot of your women are real familiar with it. Is oxytocin, which we hear about that a lot when a woman is nursing, her body is releasing oxytocin mm-hmm. and it's binding her to that baby and that baby is bonding to her. But that hormone is also released in sex. It's binding her to her husband. And what I suspect, Bonnie, and this is real radical, this is what I suspect. I suspect that these homosexual men, especially in the beginning, that they are having sex with their wife just enough that they are releasing this hormone of oxytocin that is binding her. And so they've got some sex hormones keeping them in this unhealthy relationship because the fella is having just enough sex to be releasing this hormone that is binding them to them. And the hormone that the man that he produces when he is engaging in sex is vasopressin, and it does almost the same as what the oxytocin does for the woman. And the thing about these hormones is there's no morality involved in them. If a man's out having sex with another man, he's going to have vasopressin being released in his body, bonding him to that man. So these hormones, they're not, there's nothing moral about them. They're not particular. It's just who you're having sex with that you're going to be creating bonds with them. And as I have been thinking about these hormones, in fact, I've just gone ahead and put some information like this in my book. I want women to be aware of this kind of problem out there so that if their husband's not acting right sexually, they can say, hey, fella, you're acting like a homosexual, so what kind of problem are we dealing with in our marriage? You got a medical problem? You have, let's take care of it. You've got a problem of your attitude towards women, then that's a whole new ball game, and we need to take care of it. You know, Bonnie, in your books, you talk about how that somewhere around the mid-50s, these homosexuals often become impotent with their wives. And this is something that makes sense. I've seen this with sexual addicts. I've seen it with serial adulterers. These guys, all three, homosexuals, serial adulterers, sexual addicts, all three of these classes have real bad attitudes toward women, and they're having to manipulate and play games to keep their wives not leaving them, keeping their wives there, cooking and cleaning for them and taking care of their kids. They're playing games, and in their mid-50s, what I think happens is they just wear out emotionally. I mean, it's hard manipulating.
Well, to be honest with you, Patsy, I don't see most gay men having sex with their wives in their 50s. I think that really dwindles long before that.
Okay.
You know, it becomes
okay.
Such a chore, and it becomes, you know, a matter that they have to, in many cases, fantasize very strongly in order to do that. I would say that most of the breaking point comes in your late 30s.
Okay.
But they have a really hard time struggling after that point.
Okay. So, that makes it even worse, because what's happening, if a man is forcing himself to whatever he needs to do to have sex with his wife, he's got some hormones that he's releasing in himself and in her, and once sex stops between the two of them, she's not getting the benefit of these bonding hormones, and he's not getting the benefit of the bonding hormones. And what I see is that the emotional atmosphere of that marriage deteriorates really rapidly. So that, I mean, for a while, maybe they're just roommates, but that doesn't even last very long. And a lot of times it deteriorates into where you've got open hostility. And if she's trying to solve the marriage problems and he's not interested in it, he's going to grow to hate her. And God intended for husbands and wives to be having sex and be releasing hormones between the two of them that are binding them to each other. And if they're not doing that, then that marriage is going to really be deteriorating so that, you know, a woman may think, okay, I can survive this. Well, what she's surviving right then is not what she's going to have to survive 5 years from then.
Let me ask you this, Patsy. If a woman doesn't have proof And, you know, I guess close to 60% are never, of the cases, they don't get the proof because the men won't admit it. But they just know that they're not having any kind of a, you know, sexual life with their husbands. Is that reason enough, you know, do they have permission to leave it, you know, for that situation?
In you know, a normal man, and I think a lot of these guys pretend to have medical conditions that they don't have. And if he's got a medical condition, he needs to be out there actively doing the tests and seeing the doctors and taking care of it. I think Matthew 5, where it talks about mental adultery, and this is what I tell women, if he's not having sex with you, he's having sex with somebody, and it may be himself. He may be pleasuring him his own self, because he doesn't want to have sex with you because he's not turned on by women. And Matthew 5 talks about mental adultery, the use of the hand in lust as grounds for scriptural divorce. So you know, a real frank conversation needs to take place. You know, hey, fella, you're not having sex with me. What's the problem? Are you having sex with yourself? Are you a homosexual? Are you turned off by women? And a lot of times, you know, divorce really, you've got a lot of churches involved in it. The government's involved in it because of property settlement. That's all the government cares about is property settlement. But this is something between a woman and God. And if her husband is sinning sexually against her, then the only person she needs to have that conversation with about whether or not it's right is God. She doesn't have to prove anything to her pastor. She doesn't have to prove anything to other Christians. And what I see is children suffer tremendously in these marriages where there is no love in them, where the husband and wife are not benefiting from the hormones of affection and bonding. Children just grow up terribly dysfunctional and deprived and all kinds of problems.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah, and you know, most guys aren't going to say, hey, honey, I'm in the shower masturbating while early in the morning while you think I'm getting ready to go to work. I'm taking care of myself. A lot of guys aren't going to say that. But I'll tell you what, if he comes out and he has a real stuffy nose, then she knows what he was doing. He's not fooling anybody.
Miss D, are you there?
Pardon?
Is Miss D there?
Yes, I'm here.
Miss D, I want to ask you a question.
Yes.
In the church that you grew up in, because you grew up in a religious, you know, kind of community.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very conservative.
Very conservative. How would they have viewed what Patsy has to say?
In terms of the masturbation, what she's talking about.
Well,
you know,
just in general, like women can leave marriages and, you know, that sex isn't the, you know, do they, if they're not having sex, would that be a good enough reason to leave a marriage in your church?
No, not in the church I grew up in, not in the Christian church I grew up in. It would be to the point, someone, one spouse would have to be committing adultery, and they would even go to a say, you know, you cannot rely on hearsay or things like that. You have to have proof. That's what the church I grew up in would say. And what they would say, you know, yes, of course, get divorced if you want, but if you get divorced, you do not have grounds to get remarried unless you have proof that one of the spouses committed adultery.
Yes, yeah,
so that's,
you know,
that's what
that's
my
the problem, I think,
with
you know,
a lot of women that deal with that. And that's hard. That's hard spiritually, physically, mentally on someone to live to those standards. And,
right.
You know, what I had to do myself is to have my own relation. And, of course, I respect how I grew up and the religion I grew up in. I totally respect it. But in addition to that, I had to develop my own direct link to God. And the things that came about in my life was that saved my life was completely divine intervention, and I knew I was on the right path. I don't know any better way to describe it other than I had to develop that relationship, and I knew I had to go or I was going to be dead, quite frankly. So, but I don't think it takes death to go. You know, I mean, if I would have stayed longer, it would have been tragic. not because he was gay. He had other issues as well. There was a lot of domestic violence, and that doesn't necessarily go hand in hand. But a lot of churches and a lot of women that I deal with, and I'm certainly not here to bash religion because I am Christian. I love my God. And but it's hard. It's hard for the women that grow up. And when you grow up with a set of beliefs, it's hard to change those. It's deep-rooted in.
It is, and that's why I want to know, you know, Patsy, how did you move away so much from traditional thought? What gives you that kind of insight?
And can I add to that, please? How do you move away from that but still honor? Because I found a way to move away from it, yet honor my past and honor a relationship with God. So what would you tell and offer women that's in this situation? You know, how do you honor your past, yet move forward and know you're doing the right thing in a scriptural way, Christian way, however it is you want to explain it?
Well, I've been teaching from the very beginning is that women need to do their own Bible study. I've been teaching ladies classes on marriage for 40 years, and that's what I've been telling women. You know, part of the reason we're in this situation is that we have let men interpret the Bible for us. And I have been telling women, we have to do our own Bible study. And I will tell you, I'm not knocking people's religion, but I have a very, very, very serious problem with a lot of these preachers. I have talked to enough women who have told me about all the preachers, the new preachers who have come in, that they have gone and talked to about their marriage problem. I have a very hard time believing all these preachers are ignorant about what masturbation is all about, that they are ignorant that masturbation is an act of lust. And I've said this before on your program, Bonnie, but I think it fits what we're talking about right now. As women, we're ignorant of a lot of things that men do, and the way they think, just because it's different than what we do. When I first had somebody, a woman, one of my early students, came and talked to me about her husband being a sexual addict. And that's back when that was first starting to come out in the news and people were starting to learn about it. And so she came and visited with me and said, my husband is a sexual addict. I have kicked him out of the house. He was openly going to his girlfriends. When I went to the elders of the church, they told me to just be submissive and let him come to his senses.
Mm-hmm.
He did not start coming to his senses until she kicked him out, and she said, and he thought he, and I talked to him later, he said, I figured I'd be back home within 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a year before she let him come back home, and she insisted that he get counseling, that he go to support groups, and he told me, you know, I never would have changed if she had not kicked me out. About a week after she had been to my house talking to me about sexual addiction, a fellow in the church called, and he said, hey, Patsy, what are you doing? And I said, I'm reading about sexual addiction. I've just become aware of that. And he said, I have that problem.
Mm.
2 days later, he and his wife were sitting out on our back deck talking to us openly about their problem. And he was a very active man in the church. He was out doing personal work. And his wife was talking about, he's out supposed to be teaching the gospel of Christ to women, and he's out there hitting on them. And he's kind of making some comments, and she finally blurted out, well, I didn't know you were masturbating to them. He turned red and very quietly said, that's lust. The light turned on for me right then, and I understood a lot of things about what Jesus is talking about mental adultery, because there's a lot of debates in a lot of churches about what is mental adultery. Jesus just very plainly gives permission to divorce, scripturally divorce, because of mental adultery. Now, I think most of these preachers that are out there that these women are going to and talking to them about, you know, my husband is not there for me sexually, I think they know that masturbation is part of lust. I don't think they're nearly as stupid as they act when they're talking to a woman who has this kind of marriage problem.
Mm-hmm.
I have serious problems with preachers who treat women like they are stupid. And that
they cannot.
Let me
ask you this, Patsy.
Yes.
You know, how about women who come to you and who tell you that, you know, the way they've learned all about, you know, sex their whole lives from the church is that, you know, the whole purpose of it was for procreation and not for enjoyment?
Well, as I say, God loves sex. And I think I've, on my website, I've got a booklet and you and I have had some discussion about the title of it, Christians Make the Best Lovers. It's on there free. It's a PDF, and people can go to the little bookstore, bookshelf picture, click on that. It's called Christians Make the Best Lovers. It's free. It's got 8 reasons that God designed for sex, and the least important one is procreation.
Huh.
I mean, that's just a figment of man's imagination. Having babies, obviously, is one of them. In Proverbs 5, God tells the man to go, the older man, he's past childbearing days, and he tells him to go to the wife of his youth. He married her when she was young. Now she's older, her hair's gray, her breasts are sagging. But he says, she loves you, and what you can have with that older woman is better than a sweet young thing anytime. And he just says, you go have sex with your wife because it's exhilarating.
Mm-hmm.
In Genesis 4, this is real interesting to me. The older Bibles talk about that Adam knew his wife and Abraham knew his wife. And some of the newer translations will say had sexual relations. But when you look up that Hebrew word know, it means to educate, to have intimate knowledge of that person's personality, of who they are. Those older translations that use the word knew, that is really a good translation because it's talking about knowing the person. Sex is a very personal relationship between a husband and wife. You're experiencing their personality and their ability to love you. In the Song of Solomon, the Shulamite told King Solomon, she said, Solomon, I cannot stand the thought of your hands on me because there's no love between us. And I'm going to marry the shepherd, and it is going to flow gently through the lips of those falling asleep. Now, one of the biggest complaints women have about sex is that after it's over with, their husband rolls over and goes to sleep.
Uh-huh.
Well, when a woman learns how to enjoy a vaginal orgasm, after they're done, all she wants to do is roll over and go to sleep, and she may beat her husband to sleep. And here's the Shulamite telling Solomon, it flows gently through the lips of those falling asleep. It's a sleeping pill designed by God.
Isn't it?
Okay,
I definitely agree with you. I said I definitely agree with you on that.
Yeah, okay.
So would my boyfriend definitely agree with you on that one, too.
you beat him to sleep, huh?
Who needs ambience?
He always wonders why. So I think that's just how your body's made up. I don't have an answer for that.
Yeah, okay. In Ecclesiastes 9:9, God says one of the rewards for a man working hard day after day is to enjoy life with the woman whom you love. That word love means to love emotionally or sexually. long time ago, I read, and I don't have the source of this quote handy, I read that one of the best things football players could do before a big game was have sex with their wives.
Mm-hmm.
They would it relaxed them, it gave them a good night's sleep, and they had a better chance of really playing good the next day if they had sex the night before.
I don't know. So, I was told that they're told by their coaches don't have sex the night before. Maybe they think they'll oversleep.
Yeah.
Not quite sure how that one works.
No,
but
I'm
you find, Patsy, that it's hard to educate the Christian world when they've been so indoctrinated another way?
A lot of times it is. A lot of them think that being frigid means they're a better Christian.
Right.
And God's portrait of the woman, especially in the Song of Solomon, is that she is a very sexual person.
Mm-hmm.
She promises the shepherd, let's get married, and I'm going to initiate sex with you. And, you know, lots of men are really turned on when their wife initiates sex with them. Now, homosexual isn't, because it puts him under pressure.
Mm-hmm.
But a heterosexual man, for his wife to flirt with him and to initiate sex, that is a huge turn-on. And the Shulamite promised the shepherd, let's get married, and I'm going to give my love to you. I'm going to initiate sex. And she said, my mother taught me all kinds of tricks, all kinds of ways to pleasure a husband and to enjoy his body and to give him pleasure. So Song of Solomon, it was, I believe, written by a woman, and it's all about a woman's ability to enjoy lovemaking and to pleasure her husband. I think it is the most fabulous book ever about the sexual relationship, and it just flies in the face of a lot of what Christianity is teaching women.
Well, I do know that you do talk a lot about the Book of Solomon. So could you talk about, you know, the general overall story and how that fits in for people who aren't familiar with it?
Okay. The Song of Solomon is about a young Shulamite maiden, probably about 14 years old, because they considered a woman an old maid when she was about 16.
Mm-hmm.
Solomon, and I don't have the ages in front of me right this minute, Solomon became king when he was about 16 or 17, and he immediately
mm-hmm.
married the daughter of the Pharaoh of Egypt. And then he started marrying a lot of women. And a lot of people, at the time of the Song of Solomon, he had 140 wives. And
wow.
A lot of women, and a lot of women say, oh, or lot, not a lot of women, a lot of men say, oh, he wasn't having sex with all of those. No man could do that. Yet, the Bible tells us that Solomon loved all of those women. And the word love there is our same word, means to love emotionally and sexually. And Solomon reigned for 40 years. When you do the math, he had 1,000 wives before he died. When you do the math for a 40-year reign, he was going through a new wife a little over every 2 weeks. That's including the courting her, the marriage ceremony, the honeymoon, and then he's moving on to deflower the next virgin.
Wow.
Now,
he was a very busy man.
Pardon?
So he was a very busy man.
Yes, he was. And he was taxing the Jewish people to get them to pay for all these wives. It is amazing how he set up the taxes. He divided the people into 12 groups. He did not go by the 12 Jewish tribes. He went a little bit differently. And
mm-hmm.
each one of these 12 groups was responsible for providing all the food for Solomon's wives and their family, food for his horses. He had a huge number of horses, 1 month of the year. So every 1 month of every year, each of these 12 groups that was their responsibility, was to provide for Solomon and his people. So what happened was Solomon had a vineyard. He's out looking at the vineyard, and he told the queens later. They said, hey, where'd you find this beautiful girl? And he mm-hmm. said, I was out looking at my vineyards, and I saw her, and it was just love at first sight. So he brought her to his traveling tent, a whole lot nicer than any of our RVs today that people travel in, had rooms, he had servants. He brought her, he had his maidens take care of her, dress her specially for him. And he started wooing her, started trying to talk her into being his bride. And the only problem is she's in love with a shepherd boy, and her mother has taught her about men and sex. And her mother has taught her that sex is emotional. It's your most powerful sexual organ is the brain. So mm-hmm. you don't be marrying somebody that you haven't had an emotional relationship with, fallen in love with emotionally. So Solomon, every time he makes some kind of a proposal to her, she thinks about what the shepherd has said to her. So this story, the Song of Solomon, is written in the voice of the Shulamite, the girl, and it is about her struggle of comparing what Solomon says to her. And the only thing Solomon cares about is her body. He's kind of like Howard Hughes. You know, Howard Hughes would... He would see a woman that he was interested in. He would send out a photographer to take her picture. He would get her measurements, and he would study her body. And if she had the most perfect body, then he might invite her to come live on his compound. And only when he was interested would he call her. So Howard Hughes is kind of like a modern Solomon. Solomon was all into bodies.
Do you think he was into 150 of them, though?
He had 140 in the
I'm talking about Howard Hughes.
Yeah, and then he ended up with 1,000.
Oh, my God. And, I think he really was a sex addict, Patsy.
Yes, yes, and that's what I teach. You know, this husband, this first husband that I told you about, he spent quite a bit of time talking to me about his attitudes, and as I was listening to him talk, I was thinking, wow, you sound just like Solomon in the Song of Solomon. So that's kind of when that light turned on in listening to that sexual addict talk. But the
thing, and I think that women should know that with sexual addicts, that, you know, some women say, oh, I wish I had a husband who was a sexual addict. No, you don't.
No.
I had a husband who was a sexual addict before my gay husband. And, you know, to them, sex is not an act of passion and love. It's just a release. You know, if they need the sex, it's not like they need you. You're just the vehicle they use to have it with. But if you're not available, then they will masturbate, you know, excessively. And it could happen several times a day, two or three times a day. And they don't think anything of it because, once again, it's not an act of passion or love. It's just a sexual act because that's part of their addiction.
Well, and I have heard wives say that they felt like that they were just a receptacle for their husband to masturbate.
That's how you do feel. That's how I felt.
Yeah.
And I did love my husband, but he had a mental illness, and sexual addiction was part of it. You know, some men who have obsessive-compulsive behavior, one of the way it manifests is through sex. And they'll have very mechanical sex. There's no passion involved with it. And it could last for 45 minutes to an hour, and it's not enjoyable. You know, maybe in the beginning you're really flattered, but after a few weeks you're not. You know, you don't even want to go to bed. But the thing is that, you know, to them this is part of their addiction, and it's usually tied in with a whole bunch of other obsessive compulsive behaviors. So that's not any kind of normal relationship either for a woman.
Well, and what I've seen is that these men, the sexual addicts, the serial adulterers, and the homosexuals, all of them have real bad attitudes toward women. And there's just not very much, if anything, a wife can do to combat that. It's something that comes probably from their childhood, probably from observing the way their dad treated their mother or some other significant adult treating women, or perhaps the way their mother acted. And this is just a basic attitude toward women that they're not expressing love towards her. They're using her for whatever reason.
Patsy, what seems to be the biggest issue when women come to you as far as helping them? What seems to be your greatest obstacle?
You mean for them to overcome?
Yes.
I'm going to approach it from two different standpoints. There's some women who come to me who have good basic attitudes, who want to learn how to love their husbands.
Uh-huh.
And those women are fun and easy to teach. It's very easy to, once you kind of start showing women what the Bible says about lovemaking, that God loves women, it's for them, he wants them to enjoy it. And once you can explain to them what a vaginal orgasm is all about, it's using the number one sexual organ, the brain, letting yourself really love your husband and surrender, then these women can learn real fast on how to enjoy a vaginal orgasm. And one woman told me, she said, now that I'm able to enjoy this, it just makes my husband so happy to see my joy in sex. And so those women are easy to teach. Then there is another group, and usually who I hear from in this other group is their husbands. Their husbands are so angry and so frustrated because their wives are so inhibited. They feel like being a good Christian is they do not have the right to enjoy sex.
Uh-huh.
And these men say, you know, I buy my wife a fancy negligee, and when she comes out in it, she's got her head hung and she looks embarrassed. She doesn't know how to flirt with me. And you know, the Shulamite, she was openly talking about sex. She was openly telling the shepherd, we get married, I'm going to give you my love. I'm not going to be bashful. I really think, from what I've read of Jewish history, is
mm-hmm.
that when a young girl was getting ready to get married, her mother and grandmother would give her a very liberal sex education, explain to her how to satisfy a man. And the men would give the man a sex education also, but the girl got most of it. What the fella got was limited compared to what the woman got.
Uh-huh.
And they just had really healthy attitudes toward lovemaking and the power of a woman to satisfy a man. It is very, very hard to teach a woman whose upbringing has taught her that sex is nasty and dirty and good women don't like it. It is very hard to overcome that.
Do you think a lot of women are victims of abuse who feel this way, like from the younger days, sexual abuse when they were younger?
I am starting to read that there is a lot of times women have been sexually abused that's turned them off, and a lot of times women who've been sexually abused become very promiscuous, so they can go either way. But there are a lot of them that their religious teaching has, you know, when you put some kind of a teaching with religion, you have a real powerful tool or weapon, however you want to look at it, to use against somebody. So if you're telling women, hey, God didn't create this for you, and you're not a nice person if you enjoy it, you've got a powerful tool for turning off. So a lot of it comes from ignorant teaching, religious teaching, too.
Misty, have you found that with many women that, you know, and especially you work with, you know, an at-risk population with young women, that many of them have had sexual abuse in their lives?
I'm going to say yes and no. I think it's, I'm going to use almost equal, and I may get flack over this, but I think some women, I think there's a lot of sexual abuse out there. I think there is. I'm also a proponent of, because I'm a therapist, I think that can be healed. I don't think that that should be an obstacle for anyone. I think, you know, anything we go through can be worked through if you're willing to work through it. So, yes, it can be an issue for many people. On the other hand, I also think the sex thing, I don't think we educate our girls or women. I don't. I came from a conservative religious family. I mean, it's not like I got some sex talk like Patsy was just explaining about how the Jewish women did their women. I didn't get that. And by no fault of my mother or the people that I grew up with, it's just not in our culture to do. And I think that we don't do that enough. I think there's a bigger problem in our culture. We don't treat sex naturally. We don't treat sex as a gift from God, as Patsy's saying. And I think that's a huge, huge problem in our culture. I think we need to be educated more about it, need to be more open about it. It's not anything dirty, nasty. And a lot of people associate those words with it. And that's sad. It's really sad. And it leaves a lot of us, myself included, being very inexperienced and marrying someone gay, not knowing any better.
How about
when I was
your
young?
Case, did your family talk about it or not?
Talk about sex?
Yes.
My mother would talk about it a little bit, not much. I mean, I could go to her and ask her anything. She
no,
had those open lines.
Perfectly.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought
that's okay. Patsy?
Yes?
Now, did your family talk about sex when you were growing up or no?
Well, no, I grew up seeing my dad. Every time he came in, he would hug and love on my mother. He was a very affectionate person.
Uh-huh.
And so I grew up, and I grew up knowing that my mother and my grandmother enjoyed sex.
Uh-huh.
But when I started asking my mother questions, I learned later what she was, instead of just being open and answering the question that at that age that I wanted to know, she was giving me very evasive answers. And I was very fortunate in that my mother had a book about sex that was actually probably pretty liberal for that time, that she had in the bottom drawer of her dresser, and I found it.
Mm-hmm.
And I read it, and I never asked my mother another question about sex after that. And some years later, I asked my mother if I could have that book, and she gave it to me. And it's really a very healthy book. When I read it, I learned that sex was for women, and that the worst thing that a woman could do, that the man had all these, this buildup of semen, and the worst thing a wife could do was tell her husband no. So I grew up from this book knowing that sex was for women. I got married expecting to enjoy it, and I was not disappointed. And a lot of it was probably just because I had that attitude. And I got married with the attitude that I was never going to tell my husband no. So I feel like I really benefited in finding that book and reading it. It was a medical book. It had all kinds of diagrams, medical diagrams. It had a lot about childbirth, and it was presenting all of it in a very positive view. And
mm-hmm.
So I feel really blessed that I got to read that book when I did, and I didn't have to ask my mother any more questions, because she was not answering the questions fully. And when questions are not answered fully, it's very easy for a child to jump to some false conclusions just because you don't know anything about the topic.
So do you think it's better that today people have, like, sex education in school?
No, because sex education in the school, it leaves out the emotional part of it.
Uh-huh.
It's focusing on the physical.
Uh-huh.
And so much of it, and a lot of the classes, they are, because they leave out the physical, and they can't teach about God, so they're not teaching anything about morality.
Uh-huh.
I do not have this booklet on my website. I used to have it, and I need to put it back up there. I have a booklet about safe sex, what they don't tell you, and I go through the sex education classes in the Seattle area. It's asking, they would ask the kids, at what age would you have sex? At what age would you have sex with somebody of the same sex? At what age would you move in with somebody? So it's asking a lot of questions like that. It's like, anything you want to do, go, is fine. You just need to decide at what age you're going to do that. So, you know, the schools can't teach against homosexuality, so I think they're part of the problem.
Let me ask you this, because this comes up a lot, Patsy. You know, how do you decipher, first of all, like women tell me they were Christian women, and they were taught not to have premarital sex, so how would they have ever known about their husbands without having any experience?
Well, I think about this lady that I told you about earlier. She was probably in her 40s when I knew her, and she's talking to me about her husband. And
mm-hmm.
she had been married before, and she would describe what sex was like with her first husband. And it was so different with the second one. She had that experience in a marriage, but she could not, and she knew something was wrong with the second husband, but she did not have a clue what it was. She's one of these people who was asking every preacher, you know, what's wrong in our marriage? That what do I do? I'm climbing the wall with him. And
mm-hmm.
so she had prior sexual experience, and she still was not making the connection. And there were several of us, several of these women who were talking to me like this, and we were openly discussing these issues. And the fact that he could have been homosexual never entered our mind. I think if mothers or some way that women are getting a sex education so that they know what good sex is like. I don't think they have to have premarital experience to know that, you know, all of these women, the ones that are virgins, they know they're not getting enough sex from this guy. They know they're climbing the wall. What they don't know is that the quality of the sex is very substandard from a heterosexual man making love to a heterosexual woman. That's what they don't know to be suspicious about. So,
I have to agree with that. If I can make a comment there, just for a moment, I'm going to add to that, if you don't mind.
Okay.
You know, growing up in a very conservative religion home and not having sex before being married, you know, we would, I guess you would, you know, fool around a little bit or anything like that, but not go, quote, all the way. And even though I experienced that very young, I knew something was not right. I didn't know what wasn't right. And I didn't have anything to compare it to. And I think that happens to a lot of the women that Bonnie and I work with when they marry gay men, especially when they're younger and they get married, because they have so little to compare it against, yet there's still that intuition and that knowing that something is not right. Now, if I would have been, like what Patsy's saying, I think educated properly and told about sex properly and it been more open and things like that, I maybe would have gotten out earlier. I don't know. It's a maybe. It's a possibility. But I think that's somewhere that we fail our women in our society. That sex is important and sex is a beautiful thing. It's natural and on and on. I think we, you know, fail all of our women in that respect. And I have to agree. I don't think sex education in school does much either, because it leaves out a lot of the parts they can't explain or talk about.
Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of this is going to be education down the line. And I think, Patsy, you have a big job ahead of you. That's all I
mm-hmm.
can say.
I'm cheering for you.
Well, you know, Patsy, I hope you have another 60 to 80 years to live.
Well.
It's going to take you at least that long to get this message across, and especially like in some of the, you know, more conservative areas where Christianity is just practiced by fundamentalists who interpret or misinterpret whatever they're reading to their own advantage.
I agree.
As you say, you know, it's men, who are interpreting this. You know, and a lot of times I think it's for control, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think so as well.
Yeah, I mean, this
well,
is their way that they control everything by telling you, you know, making you feel guilty for what you want that's natural. But, you know, that's, you know, this is going to take many, many years, but I'm just so amazed that you have the courage to do this. And let's talk to people about your radio show every week.
Well, actually, I'm kind of taking a break for the holidays, and I'm going to be on this the second Tuesday of December. I'm going to be interviewing Oscar Miles. He and I talk about. He does a lot of counseling with sexual addicts and married couples, and so he and I talk pretty frankly about sex. So I'm going to be talking to him the second Tuesday. Which I guess we're coming up on that here pretty quick of December. And then I'll be back on the air the second Tuesday of each month of each week in January. So that's kind of my plan on that.
Right, but in the meantime, people can go back to your archives, right?
Yes, yes. They can go back to the archives and listen to radio programs. They can see the ones where Oscar and I have done that. I've been talking about the Song of Solomon. I've been talking about the power of sexual surrender. So I get pretty plain on there because ignorance doesn't help anybody. And actually, you know, one place where I get my courage is the Song of Solomon is a woman's story. I believe it is written by the Shulamite simply because it's telling her thoughts. And the Bible tells us no one knows a man's thoughts except that man tell us other than God. And it is her thoughts, and so it is her story. I believe God chose a woman, the Shulamite, to educate the world about sex. So I think that is a very holy and womanly thing to do for a woman to be talking openly about sex. She was talking to the highest government official in the land, King Solomon, about sex. And she was essentially saying, "Sex, Solomon, you're a pervert, and I can't stand, you know, the thought of your hands on me, but it's going to be wonderful falling asleep with the shepherd, having sex with the shepherd and falling, rolling over and beating him to sleep, you know." So, so I get a lot of comfort in knowing that I'm pleasing to God talking about sex because he has preserved this book in the Bible written by a woman to essentially teach the world about sex. So I feel real good about what I'm doing, and I get a lot of comfort from that.
Patsy, people can go to your website and go to your newsletter, right?
Yes, they can go to my embarrasstthealligator.com and sign up for my newsletter. They can go to my author website, patsyraydawson.com, click on the bookshelf, and there are three free booklets. There they can download. One of them is Christians Make the Best Lovers with the 8 Reasons God Has for Making Love, with procreation being the least important. In fact, I was talking to a lady the other day who is a nurse, that one of the best things, I told her that I had read that one of the best things you can do when you're pregnant, so you're already pregnant, you know, if that's the only reason you have sex, you can stop. But one of the best things you can do while you're pregnant to prepare your body for an easy delivery is to have regular vaginal orgasms. Have sex with your husband to get ready for childbirth. So,
certainly my ex-husband looked at that as a free, you know, coupon not to have to have sex while I was pregnant. Free pass for him. Like 8 months out of each pregnancy, and like another couple months after the baby was born. So, if your husband doesn't want to have sex with you, that's another real big key factor here.
Yeah.
No matter when it is. But Patsy,
you know,
I really appreciate you being our guest again tonight. You know, women love listening to you. And if you want to get together with Patsy in March, you know, we're going to have a good, nice get-together where you can learn more and meet Patsy in person. And, you know, there's just so much more to learn. And I just am so much in awe of you that you're willing to do this and to help women in this way. So, Patsy, I hope you'll come back with us in a couple months again.
Okay. I'd like to do that. So, and I'm looking forward to meeting you in March. And is Misty going to be there too?
Oh, that would be nice. I'll see what
I
can
always,
do.
Yeah, whenever people can get together, it's always wonderful.
It's always nice to get together with everyone in person.
Yep, yeah, and Texas is nice in March, right?
It can be pretty good weather in March. Sometimes you get a surprise, but it's starting to warm up and pretty nice generally. So,
well, to me, nice is not hot. Nice is cool.
Yeah.
Right?
You're not going to be too hot, that's for sure.
Well, I'm making it in early March. But anyway, welcome
all
of our guests who would like to get more information on our March get-together. So please write to me at bondk@aol.com. And Misty, are you getting your workshop together for the holidays?
I am. I have one coming up December the 18th, I believe it is. I'm doing this from memory, so bear with me. December the 18th at 2 o'clock, which is on a Sunday. It's very similar to the one done the week before Thanksgiving. Basically, it's a couple hours of getting together with women to get through the holidays. It'll be full of tips. It'll be full of individualized help from me. And just getting to share that time with women that are experiencing the same pain you're going through, and pulling together. The energy and power of coming together with a group of people that have experienced what you've experienced is just something really, it's almost miraculous. You know, that's probably a strong word to use, but it's just so healing when you come together and you have a similar past. And, you know, mountains can really be moved. And holidays are so tough. So if you're having a tough time, I really recommend for you to do that. That's going to be, once again, December 18th. 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. There'll be women from all over there. Several different continents usually participate. And it's great to hear people's voice and connect on that level. So if you're interested, you can email me, and that's MistyLynnHall@AOL.com, MistyLynnHall@AOL.com, or just get in touch with Bonnie, and she knows how to find me.
Yes, and this is a telephone session, so don't say you can't get there. You don't have to. It's just from your own home. So very easy and extremely supportive, and especially during this holiday time when women need more support than ever. So, you know, our chat room's available. My newsletter is at mid-month. If you're not on my newsletter list, just let me know, and I'll be happy to put you on. And, you know, I just want to thank you again, Patsy. You know, you're just a hero to so many of us.
Absolutely.
For breaking that glass ceiling and just not getting cut up to death by doing it. So we want to thank all of you and have a wonderful week. Misty, you can send your goodnight greeting.
Absolutely. Good night and love to all.
All right, and have a wonderful week, and we'll be here next week with you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. All right. Bye.